Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome to today's Daf Yomi, which is Yuma Mem Gimel. We begin right on top of the Yomid. Says the Gemara, V'shachat Oysa. We resume our discussion regarding Parah Adumah. Now the Gemara will present for us many psukim throughout the parasha of Parah Adumah, which contain many diyukim and inferences of various sorts. And the Gemara will tell us how we're meant to learn those psukim and apply them lahalacha. Before we proceed, perhaps it would be wise to make reference once again to that phrase presented in yesterday's daf, which will provide an introduction to today's sugya. You may want to find it on Membeis and Membeis, around 15-16 lines from the bottom of the Amid, where Ula tells us like this: Omar Ula kol ha-parsha kula. If you take a close look and analyze the Parsha of Parah Adumah, the beginning of Parshas Chukas, you'll find an interesting phenomenon. Mashma, at times you will have a mashmois, an indicator, contained in one pasuk, which is Moitzi Miyad Mashma, which is coming to override and change another indication found in the previous pasuk. For instance, one pasuk will tell you that this particular function, this particular stage in the Parah Adumah process needs to be done by a kohen and a kohen only. Then you proceed to the next pasuk, where suddenly the rules change. You no longer need a kohen for the next phase of the process. So at times that's what happens. One mashma, one indicator, one set of guidelines will be changing, will have changed from the previous set of guidelines, mashma moitz miyad mashma, and at times it stays consistent and the pasuk continues, continue in harmony. Sometimes the mashmois is just an extension of the previous set of guidelines. No change takes place. Now, of course, it's hard to rationalize all these halachas that we're going to learn today. Shlomo HaMelech already said, Amarti Echkema. I figured it was within my mind's reach to understand the wisdom contained therein in the Parah Adumah process. And it turns out, it's actually beyond comprehension. So likewise, it's difficult to attempt to rationalize all the various angles and different aspects of the halachas pertaining to Parah Adumah. But as a general formula, as a rule of thumb, Ula presents it very clearly. If you go through the psukim, sometimes rules will change from one step to the next, and sometimes they'll remain intact. Let's come back to our Gemara. I'm Gimel and Aleph, right on top. We have the pasuk speaking about the shechita. V'shachat oisa is a miut. Shelo yishchet acheres ima. He can't hold a long knife and do the shechita on the Parah Adumah and at the same time be shechet another animal with it. It needs to be v'shachat oisa, a focused mass of shechita on the Parah Adumah. The pasuk continues, v'shachat oisa lefanav. Now the Gemara will begin going through all the psukim and we will see how at times things remain consistent, meaning from one stage of the process you will not have to change lanes. You won't have to change the rules, but at times there will be a sudden change, a shift from one track to the other, from one set of halachos to another. So the pasuk is about the shechita. The pasuk says, you meant to give the Parah Adumah to Elazar HaKohen, v'shachat oisa lefanav. Now, you may recall yesterday we had a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Who does the shechita of Parah Adumah? Shmuel says, a zar can do shechita. Shechita is not an avodah. And therefore Shmuel learns, v'shachat oisa means anybody can do the shechita provided that it's lefanav, in the presence of Elazar HaKohen. That was the rule in the Midbar. Elazar HaKohen, who was the Skan Kohen Gadol, he had to do certain things related to the Parah Adumah. He was in charge. And the shechita, even if it's performed by a zar, is acceptable, provided that it's done in his presence, under his care, so to speak. Whereas Rav maintained, no. We learn the pasuk literally. You give the parah to a lazar, v'shachat oisa, he does the shechita lefanav. Now, why add the word lefanav? Of course, if you're being shechet, it's in front of you. Says the Gemara, let's go through that pasuk. Lefanav will be a ribui. L'rav, it means shleyasiach. According to Rav, who holds that it's Elazar doing the shechita, What's the point of the word lafanav? To tell you that one who is engaged in the paraduma production process needs to remain mindful and focused, cannot divert his attention from the para. He has to take extra care to safeguard the paraduma from any sort of poisel or metame that might come about. So that's Rav's opinion. The Shmuel, he has a different opinion. V'shachat ha'shal lefanav is coming to tell you, she'heizar sheichat. Of course, a zar can do the shechita, as long as it's lefanav ve'la azaraya. As long as Allah is observing the procedure. So we have the first stage of paraduma, the shechita. We have machlokes. Rav learns the kohen has to do the shechita. In the midbar was actually Elazar HaKohen, the Sgan Kohen Gadol, whereas Shmuel holds, V'shachat HaYisah, anybody can do Shechita, live fanav in the presence of Elazar. Let's proceed to the next stage in the Paraduma procedure. The next pasuk says, V'lo kach Elazar HaKohen midamo be'etzba'oi. Here we're speaking about Elazar doing the Kabbalah of the Dam, of the Paraduma, and proceeds with the Hazo'ah of that Dam towards the Hechel. So this was already the hakrova of the paraduma, so to speak. The avodah is pertaining to the actual dam. The fact that the Torah adds the word alazar, why the repetition? We've already mentioned alazar in the previous pasuk by shechita. Why the repetition? Apparently, there's some sort of limud here, which will actually tell us that the rules have changed. Suddenly changed. Once we've arrived at the next stage of the paraduma production process. So here's your first example of mashma moitzi miyad mashma. We have one pasuk undoing the halacha stated in the previous pasuk. Says the Gemara, the point of this pasuk will be as follows. L'Shmuel, according to Shmuel, who maintained that the shechita was performed even by a zar, the point of the pasuk now making reference to Elazar is lahadure le'Elazar, to revert it back to Elazar. Meaning that when it comes to Kabbalah Saddam or Hazar Saddam, now we need Elazar. Now we need a Kohen involved. As opposed to Shechita, which didn't need a Kohen because Shechita is lavavayda. L'Rav, what about Rav? Who held that even the Shechita needed to be done by Elazar? So what's the point of the pasuk mentioning Elazar again by the Kabbalah and the Hazor? Says the Gemara, you're right. Have a miut achar miut. Here we find a formula called miut achar miut, one of the formulas applied to the Torah. We have a double exclusion. We say it's no longer serving as a miut. Ve'i miut achar miut el rabbis. When you have a miut followed by another miut, such as in this case, first pasuk says Elazar does a shechita. Second one says, Elazar does the Kabbalah Nazar. Why the repetition? Elazar, nobody else. Elazar, nobody else. Once and again. We say, it's no longer being a Mamayit. It's actually going to be Marbe. Elal Rabbis. The Afilukoin Hedit. You don't need Elazar being involved any longer. The Shechita he has to do. That's the initiation of the Paraduma process. But when it comes to Kabbalah, Saddam, Nazar, Saddam, even a Koin Hedit can do that as well. Farshim attempt to explain the rationale behind Emiut Achamit al Rabbis. Some explain it as follows, because once you have one meat, there's no need for another meat. Apparently the second meat is coming to indicate to you that the first meat isn't absolute. It isn't all-encompassing. Otherwise you wouldn't need another meat. It's coming to tell you that the first meat is a limited meat. So perhaps that's one way to explain it. In any case, over here we see clearly that the second meat will change the rules. Suddenly you shifted gears. From a Lazar, you moved on to an ordinary Kohen Hedyot who can do the Kabbalah and the Hazor. Let's move on to the next stage of the Paraduma, which is described in the Pasuk of V'lokach HaKohen Eitz Erez V'Ezoi V'Shni Solas. He takes that bundle, the block of wood, the grass, the Shni Solas, the red ribbon, and tosses it into the fire. Now, why does the pasuk repeat HaKohen? Of course, we're speaking about HaKohen all along. Why mention HaKohen again? Says the Gemara, once again we find a change of rules. The fact that the pasuk sees a need to repeat the word HaKohen, there's some sort of indication here. some sort of chiddush that the pasuk is telling you to change things from the previous stage, from the previous state, phase of the process. L'shmol, according to Shmuel, who maintained that lokach elazar akoyin, meaning the kabal nazar, needed to be done by elazar, because that's the reason why the pasuk says elazar. So according to him, now by v'lokach akoyin, apparently some change, some transformation taking place, which will be that you no longer need a kohen, like a lazar kohen, even a kohen hadid can do it. The shmul nafil of a kohen hadid. Even an ordinary kohen was roy to take the eight eras, etc., and toss them into the fire. So the rules have changed. The Rav, according to Rav, that already in the previous phase, you no longer needed a lazar. That's the way Rav learned the previous halach. V'lokach a lazar kohen was a double miyut, indicating that even a kohen hadid can do that. So according to him, there's no longer any room to downgrade. You're at the kohen hadid. You can't go down any further. They were assuming that you need a kohen, of course. So there's no way to go. The pasuk said you need a kohen. So what's the point of mentioning the kohen again? Says the more l'rav itzrich. The pasuk has to mention kohen. You know why? Perhaps there will be room to suggest since this maisa of tossing and the eitz eres, the ezev, etc., into the fire doesn't really involve the actual guf hapara. Lightly by a kohen, perhaps a kohen does not need it. Kamash malan, the chiddush pasuk is you need a kohen for this as well. The next pasuk says v'chibes because of a kohen. So the kohen involved in the production process becomes tamei to the extent that even his begadim require tefillah, they become tamei. What's the point of a chibes because of hakoyin? Why mention hakoyin yet again? They're coming to teach us something, b'kiyunai, that the kohen engaged in the paraduma process needs to wear beidei kahuna. He can't do the paraduma process without beidei kahuna. Perhaps you would think, well, it's not really a carbon, we learned yesterday, it's by the kabbais, it's outside the Beis HaMikdash. Sure, you need a kohen. Just like a kohen will take a look at the nega. Doesn't necessarily have to wear beidei kahuna. A kohen needs truma, doesn't have to wear beidei kahuna while he's doing so. You need the person, the kohen. But who says beidei kahuna are required? Beidei kahuna meant for the avoid the Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Torah says. Or perhaps there's another svar, a chavrusa. Levi Malone pointed out, the pasuk says that the begadim become tamei. Perhaps you would say, well, don't wear beidei kahuna. Don't be metame those begadim. We're ordinary begadim. Comes the pasuk and says, v'chibes begadim ha-koyen b'kihuna. He needs to look like a kohen. He needs to wear beidei kahuna, which enable him to do this paraduma process. The next pasuk says, v'tamei ha-koyen ha-de'erev. The kohen becomes tamei until nightfall. Again, the word kohen. Why the repetition? It's coming to teach us kohen b'kihuna l'dayros. Then not only in the midbar did the kohen have to wear his b'kdei kihuna, even l'dayros, even throughout the generations, when involved in the paraduma process, he needs to wear b'kdei kihuna. And again, we need to point that out, that the kohen, as important as he is, and despite the fact that we're not speaking about avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, but to truly serve as a kohen, he needs to wear beidei kahuna. And again, despite the fact that they become tamei during the process. So we have the shechita, we have the kabbal and hazah, we have taking the eight eras, etc., tossing into the fire. We learned about the begadim of the kohen that become tamei, and the kohen himself that becomes tamei. And we explained why the pasuk speaks about a lazar again and again, and kohen again and again. Each one is coming to teach us some sort of lesson. And the most recent one was v'tamei kohen ad erev, that the kohen has to appear like a kohen, present himself like a kohen with beidei kahuna, even throughout the doros. Of course, while involved in the paraduma process, says the Gemara. Well, why do you have to teach us that a kohen has to wear beidei kahuna during the paraduma process? This additional halacha that the the Kohen has to wear bidikuna throughout the Doiris. What's the point of teaching us that? It works. It would make sense according to that Shita that throughout the Doiris, a Kohen Gadol does not need to be involved at all in the Paraduma process. You may recall we had a Machlekes yesterday regarding the Paraduma Doiris. You see, in the Midbar, it was a Gzeres HaKosov that only Elazar HaKohen, the Sgan Kohen Gadol, was meant to perform certain tasks in the Paraduma process. Well, according to Rav, it was the Shechita, but not the Kabbalah and Hazor. According to Shmuel, it was the Kabbalah and Hazor, actually, and not the Shechita. But in any case, we needed a Elazar involved. What about in the later days? So according to one Shechita, a Kohen Hedyot can do anything. There's no need to get a Kohen Gadol involved. According to the other Shita, even throughout the Doris, you needed a Kohen Gadol involved in those specific facets of the Paraduma process for which a Lazar was required in the Midbar. So the Kohen Gadol throughout the Doris performed those same elements in the Paraduma process as a Lazar did in the Midbar. So that was a discussion we had yesterday. So getting back to Sugya at hand, we have a Pasuk which tells us that you have to wear big the kahuna throughout the doors. That works well if you hold that throughout the doors you don't even need a kohen gadol involved at all in the paraduma. So I would say, well, if a kohen head is enough, maybe he doesn't need big the kahuna. Oh, nichal man damar l'doros b'kohen hedit shaper. This works well, according to Shita that says throughout the doros a kohen hedit can do the paraduma. Okay, perhaps I can speculate and think that kohen hedit is okay without b'kohen kahuna. Elo l'man damar l'doros b'kohen gadol, according to other Shita, that a kohen gadol must be involved at least at certain points of the paraduma process. Hash the kohen gadol b'inon. Now, once you need a kohen gadol involved, at least somewhat, would you think that those portions of the paraduma process where kohen hedit can be involved, he doesn't need to wear big de kahuna? That's a major downgrade. It's a double step downgrade. Point out the Tesis Yishonim, the Ritva. It's hard to believe that we would go from one extreme to the other. On the one hand, we say, for instance, the shechita needs a kohen gadol. That's all the way up there. And then we'll say, well, the other avodas can be done by kohen hedit without bidei kahuna. It's pretty extreme. How should the kohen gadol be inon? If at certain points you need a kohen gadol, bidei kahuna mebaya? Is there any room to think that at certain points you don't even need bidei kahuna? Says the more in. You're right. You can learn it from a kavachim. The kavachim itself already proves to us that big de kahuna are in place. So why then does the pasuk have to point it out? And you're right, most of the asab kal v'chomer, at times we find that even something that can be derived through a kal v'chomer, torach, the kasav l'kro, the Torah takes the trouble to express it clearly. And this is found many times through Shas, and that answers the kasha. You're right, kal v'chomer would have sufficed, but Torah wanted to spell it out. Okay, let's go back to the next phase in the paraduma process. Pasuk continues, V'osav ish tohar, es ever ha-pura v'niach. And ish tohar will gather together the ashes of the paraduma and place the ashes in a mokim tohar. What's the point of mentioning ish tohar? Why would you think it's an ish tameh? Says by the Gemara, there's a lesson to be learned. Ish is coming to tell you, l'hachshir sazor. From this point going forward, you no longer need a kohen. Remember, we're speaking after the paraduma has been shechted, and the dam has been taken to Kabbalah and Hazon, and burned, the pur has been burnt. Now the pur is lying in ashes, and the fellow is going to come gather together the ashes. It's post-production. Now even a zor is okay. Ish l'achshir sazor. The word tzor in this pasuk, vasav ish tzor, is coming to tell you l'achshir sa'isha. You don't really need an ish, even an isha is okay. The next word, v'hiniach, is coming to tell you, mi sheyesh boidas laniach. The only one that can get involved in this process is a fellow who has enough das, enough mindfulness, a developed mind, as opposed to yotzu, cheirish, deaf mute fellow, shoite, deranged fellow, vekata, she'ein bo hadas laniach. They don't have the developed mind, they don't have the right level of mindfulness, they don't have das. Chazal consider das is not contained in these individuals, and therefore they can't do the asifas eifar par. So the asav ishtar is coming to tell you, Ezar is okay, we learn that from Ish. And Isha is okay, we learn that from Tzohar, which is a riba even for Isha. But not a chayr shayt of a katan, because v'hiniach indicates you need a developed das. Okay, so we've arrived at this point. We did the shchita, the hazah, we did the asifa seif. Now we're holding by kiddush, taking those ashes and mixing them up with the mayim chayim. And then you take that water and you do the hazah on the tumit. It's not awesome. We actually have a mishnah over there in Meseches Parah. Who does the kiddush? Kiddush is a reference to mixing up the efer with the mayim. Hakol k'sher nekalish. All are roi, suitable candidates for kiddush. Anybody can do it. Even a czar. Anybody. Chutz mecher shayt v'katan. Except for these individuals. Rabbi Yehuda? Machshe v'katan. He says, cher v'shayt, I agree. He can't do that. But a katan? He can do kiddush. U'paisel be'isha. But an isha is out of bounds. U'ba'adregnes, this fellow who exhibits simonim of both genders, so he's a suffolk isha, he's also excluded from the kiddush process. So we actually have a machlekes. Who can do kiddush? According to Rabbanon, a zar, an isha, that's okay, except for a cher shayt v'katan. Rabbi Yehuda goes in the other direction. He says, sure, a katan is okay, but not an isha. Says in my time at Rabbanon. Let's go back to the psukim and figure out where they're coming from. Says the one of the pasuk says like this: "Dechsiv v'lokhu latami ma'afer seifas achatas." So take some of the ashes and mix it into the water. Let's assume v'lokhu is referring to those same individuals who performed the previous task, the asifa seifer, which preceded the kiddush. Hanuch, the Pasluch Basifa, those same individuals who were disqualified the Masifa Sefer, i.e., the Cher Shait of the Katan, Pasluch Bekiddush, a Pasluch Bekiddush as well. So, according to Rabbanon, they view Asifa Sefer and Kiddush Mechatas as though it's one continuous process. Let's assume they're the same specifications, the same very guidelines. Apply to Asifa Sefer, which means the Zarya, the Ishaya, but not the Cher Shayt V'Katan. Those same specifications extend over and apply to the next pasuk of Olach L'Tamei Afar Sefer Zachatos V'Nosan Alav Mayim Chaim Al Keli, the Kiddush, creating the Efer with the water. It's a continuous process. It begins with the Asifa Sefer and continues on to the Kiddush. Let's assume that the Halacha remains the same and consistent. There's no change. You have an example of mashma mamela. One pasuk is not undoing the previous pasuk. We're keeping the rules intact. So once again, hanach the pasloch basifa, those individuals who are pasal to do the asifa sefer, pasloch bekiddush, likewise are pasal to do kiddush. We exclude the cherish, the shayt v'katan. V'hanach the achshir loch basifa, however, those who are kosher for the asifa, the zor, Neisha, Achshiri Lach BeKiddush, are suitable for Kiddush as well. So according to Rabbanon, it's very simple. It's considered one continuous process. The same individual that does the Asifa Sefer can do the Kiddush Mechatas. And the one that can't do the Asifa Sefer is possible for Kiddush Mechatas as well. Rabbi Yehuda responds to this as follows. He says, no. The Torah is taking a turn. We're changing lanes. We're switching tracks. We're changing the rules. Asifa Sefer is one type of avoida, one type of element, whereas Kiddush Mechatas takes on a new form, a new identity, has new halachas. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is an example of mashma moitzi miyad mashma, that the rules will change. Suddenly the katan will be kasher and the isha will be pasul, which is exactly the opposite of the previous halach. Rabbi Yehuda, he says like this. If it would be as you say, that the lakhul atomim afer sebe zachatas is simply an extension of the previous episode of the afsifa sefer, im kein lemakrok v'lokach. The pasuk should simply say v'lokach. That same fellow should proceed to grab a hold of the ashes and place it into the water. My v'lokhu. Why plural v'lokhu? Which indicates that we're speaking about different type of people than earlier. Dafilu katan, the pasul l'chosam. It's coming to tell you even a katan who was pasul in the previous phase for the asifa ha'sa'efer, hocha kasha, when it comes to kiddush, he's kasha. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, although a katan was pasul earlier, but here the rules have changed, and a katan is kasha. Isha manalei, how does he know that an isha is pasul? Once again, that's going to change. From Asifa Sefer, where she was kosher, here we're taking a turn, we're saying, she's pasul. V'nosan, v'loi v'nosan. Why does the pasuk switch terms, beginning with v'lachu, then continues with v'nosan? It's coming to tell us, v'nosan, lashon zachar, only he, she can't do it. Therefore, an isha disqualified from kiddush. Now, Tosis points out, interesting thing, it seems that even according to Yehuda, despite the fact that he says rules have changed, and the katan who was pasul earlier in the previous step by the asifa sefer is kashi here, he wouldn't suggest that a cheresh and shoita as well would suddenly become kashi here. Why? Why the difference between a katan and a cheresh and shoita? Says Tosis, because a cheresh and shoita are never going to develop a mature and developed mind, whereas a katan is osi lechal das. He's on his way. He's going to develop soon. So he has a microcosm, das here. There's some sort of element of das, although not fully developed. But he's closer to das than the rest. And therefore, Yehuda opts to allow, to qualify a katan to do kiddush as opposed to the cheresh v'shoita to remain as is, disqualified from both asifa sefer and kiddush as well. Let's stop for a second. The formula is pretty simple. Basically, the halacha by kiddush has taken a turn from the halacha by asifa sefer. That's a contribute. The one that was kasha by asifa sefer, the isha, is suddenly pasul by kiddush. The katan who was pasul earlier is kasha now. Whereas the rabbanim maintain, things remain intact and consistent. There's no changeover at all. We haven't changed the rules between Asifa and Kiddush Mechatas. In both cases, we say Ezor is kosher, and Isha is kosher, but not a Cheresh Shoita v'Katan. And the Rabbanan respond to Rabbi Yehuda. What was Rabbi Yehuda's question? If Kiddush is merely an extension of Asifa, well, then why does the Pasuk use the term V'lokchu? Why not simply V'lokach? That same fellow continue into the next stage of the process. V'rabbanon, they respond, Yikos rachmana v'lokach v'nosam. Had the Torah said, v'lokach the efer and v'nosam et ramayim, havamina, perhaps I would say, has to be the same person. The process is so one and the same and continuous, it must be done uninterrupted. The same person has to perform the task from beginning to end. Ad shokel chad v'yoyv chad. It's only kosher if the same person takes the ashes, shokel chad, v'yoyv chad, and he himself mixes it into the water. That's what I would think. If the Torah would say v'lokach v'nosan, same individual. Kasa rachmana v'lokhu. That's why the Torah switches. Begins with the word v'lokhu, which indicates rabim, plural. Many can do it. It doesn't have to be the same person. V'kasa rachmana v'lokhu v'nosan. But if the Torah would say v'lokhu and then proceed v'lokhu l'atom v'afar sefer zachat v'nosan, twice lashon rabim in the same pasuk, I would say, well, take it to the other extreme. Hava amina, I would say, ada shakri trei. You need two people grabbing the ashes, v'yavi trei, and another two people, or perhaps the same two people, actually putting the ashes in the water, doing the actual mixing. Kasa rachmona v'lachu v'nasan. That's where Torah switches over. It begins with v'lachu l'ashen rabim, and then proceeds with v'nasan to tell you, afilu shakli trei, v'yav chad. It's okay even if two people grab the ashes and only one places it into the water. Explain to Mepharshim, this will indicate to us that we don't need the same person involved from beginning to end. Can't be. Because if Reuven and Shimon are grabbing the ashes and only Shimon is putting it into the water, evidently it's not going to be the same person throughout, because Reuven is no longer involved. That teaches us you don't need the process to be performed by the same person from beginning to end. That explains the discrepancy in the Lashon, why it's v'lachu and v'nasan. But of course we maintain, say the Chachamim, that there's no change as far as the rules. The guidelines remain the same throughout, from Asifa Se'efer to and including Kiddush Mechatas. In both we say the Zohar is kosher, the Isha is kosher, but not the Cheir Sheit V'Kot. Now let's proceed to the final stage of the process, which is taking the Ezoiv and dipping it into the water. And here again we have a Lashon Ish and Tor in the Pasuk, which seems to be repetitive. We already spoke about Ish Tor. Why again? So here we're going to have a change of rules. Let's see. V'lokach Ezoiv v'tovel b'mayim Ish Tor. Why Ish? Why Tor? Why the repetition? Says the Gemara, we have two ways of explaining this pasuk. It depends how you established the rules in the previous stage of production. Whatever the rules were then, now you're going to switch over. So according to Rabbanon, the switch will take place in one manner, and according to Abiyuda, in a different manner. In either case, there's a switch over taking place. You're changing channels now. Why? Because we have the word Ish and Tar, which are indicators, which are chidushim, which are me'utim, ribuim, whatever it is some sort of a lesson being taught. And the point is, change the rules. Hazah has different guidelines. L'Rabbanon, it's as follows. Ish v'le'isha. The word Ish tells us, only an Ish can do it, not an Isha. Only an Ish can do the Hazah on the tummy. The word Tzar is actually a ribui. L'achshir is a katan. You don't need an adult. Even a katan is okay, as long as he's Tzar. So this is a changeover. This is a shift from the previous halach. The lekicha sa'efer, doing the kiddush, where we learned that a zor and isha are kosher, because once again, the kiddush is merely an extension of the previous halach of the asav ishtar. So going to Rabbanon, the halacha remained the same, intact. There was no changeover when it came to kiddush. A zor and isha were kosher, but a chayr shayt v'katu were not kosher. Now, we undergo a change. Now, we change lanes. We say that, in contrast to the previous halach, where a katan was pasal, now, the katan will be kosher. As opposed to the previous halach, where we saw Isha was kosher, now, an Isha is excluded. According to Abiyuda, we'll have the following results. According to Abiyuda, who already made the shift, when it came to Kiddush Mechatas, he said, Kiddush Mechatas has different guidelines than Asifa Se'efer. Kiddush Mechatas, a katan is kosher, but not an Isha. So now when it comes to the final phase of production, when it comes to the final stage, V'lokach Ezev V'tov Amayim Ishtar, which indicates that there needs to be some sort of shift, some sort of change in direction, he's going to shift it a bit differently. The katan who was kosher before will be pasul now. The Isha who was possibly for will be kosher now. So we'll end up with the results which are directly opposite of the Rabbanon. But it's a simple formula that we're following. They're just switching over. And whatever their starting point was, now the switchover will end up with comparable results. Continues the mother of Yudah. He'll learn that Ish is coming to tell you about like cotton. So cotton is possible. As opposed to the previous halacha where katan was kosher, here it's possible. Tor will come to tell you la'achshir se'isha, that an isha is kosher. So as opposed to kiddush where an isha was excluded, here shall be included. So in conclusion, we went through the whole sugya, the whole parsha, discussing the halachas and various stages of the paraduma production process. And at times we find things remain intact with no change in halacha. At other times we find the Torah is indicating to us, shift over, change lanes, change the guidelines. Mashma moitzi miyad mashma. And then the result was that when it comes to hazah on the tummy, according to the Rabbanon, a katan can do it, but an isha. Whereas according to Yehuda, it's exactly the opposite. An isha is kosher, but not a katan. So this is simply the product, the result of applying this formula throughout the parsha. Says more, that's so. According to Yehuda, an isha is kasha but not a katan. We have a Mishnah in Maseches Parah. Hakolik sherim lahazes, all can do the hazah, chutz mitumtum adreignus v'isha, except for an isha or a tumtum who doesn't exhibit gender signs, but adreignus who has the double signs. So all these are possible because they're a suffolk isha, and an isha is disqualified from doing the hazah. V'katan sheyesh, or some say she'ein, v'idas isha masayatan. The katan would like to do the hazah, take the Efer Paraduma, the Mayim, and do the Azor on the Tar, he needs some help. Isha Masayati, she can help him out. Tosfos explains that she's not actually holding his hands, but she'll hold the Kli, which contains the Mei Para, and allow him to dip his Ezav into the Kli. Isha Masayati, Umaza, provided that he, the Katan, does the Azor. So this is fully in line with the Rabbanon, that a Katan is kosher, but not an Isha. Fully followed Rabbi Yehuda. Where's Rabbi Yehuda to be found? How come he doesn't disagree? How come he's not chaylik on Tanakh Kama? He should say, well, it's just the opposite. Isha is kosher and not a katan. Amar Abaye, kivan damar mar. But since we've already learned a very clear formula, that how do we approach the parsha, the psukim and paraduma? Mashma moitzmiad mashma. At times, one pasuk will be changing the rules indicated in the previous pasuk. U mashma mamela. At times, it's just going to go with the flow without changing the halachas. So once we know that that formula is meant to be applied to the psukim, everybody knows the psukim, everybody's a bucky proficient in the parasha paraduma, and you'll figure out on your own that pollock. Evidently, Rabbi Yehuda is chaylik. Why? Because if you go through the psukim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, which basically means that when it comes to kiddush mechatas, we say that a katan is okay, but not an isha. So now we proceed to the next stage, Hazos Mechatas on the Tomei, where the Pasuk indicates that a switch has to take place. We switch the guidelines, we change the rules. So what's the end result according to Rabbi Yehuda? An Isha is okay, not a Katan. It's partial, everybody knows. So maybe there's no need for Rabbi Yehuda to actually express it clearly in the Mishnah. One more halach that we still need to learn is based on the Pasuk of Ziza HaTor LaTomei. The Torah will do the Hazah of the Paraduma water on the Tomei. Now the word Torah here is superfluous. We spoke about a Torah doing the process. Why does the Torah have to repeat? Michlal Shu Tomei. Torah is telling you, we don't need a fellow who's completely Torah. As long as he's out of Tomei, as long as he's out of the woods, Michlal Shu Tomei. He's out of the Klal Tomei. Me, he's out of, he came out of the Klal Shu Tomei. Meaning, he's no longer a real Tomei. He was already Tovel, although he didn't complete his Tahara. He is yet awaiting nightfall. But this teaches us that once you're out of Tumah, you're okay for the Paradum. Michlal Shu Tomei, limit Atful Yom Shikashu Bepara. This tells you that even Atful Yom can go ahead and be involved in the Paraduma production process. The mystic Amar Omar Vasi, ki havu bo Rabbi Yechonon ev Reish Lakish bePara. When Rabbi Yechonon Reish Lakish delved and analyzed the Parsha Paraduma, they tried to see whether we can just run through the Psukim consistently without having to resort to shifting the rules in the middle, changing the guidelines. It didn't work. They weren't successful. Loimaski mina. They didn't come up with it from it. Elo kimai dimasik. Only what he brings up, a ta'ala, a fox, only what a fox can bring up, a little dirt, maybe a karba from a plowed field, a little bit of dirt that comes up on his feet when he walks through a plowed field. So it's a mashal. They didn't come up with much. They didn't gain clarity. They tried to work things out consistently, but it just didn't work. Ela amri, but they concluded, apparently, he must apply that cryptic formula, which was mashma moitzimiyad, mashma indeed. We find sometimes one pasuk will undo the previous pasuk, the rules will suddenly change from one stage to the other, umashma mela, and at times you have it going consistently throughout, that there's no change between one stage of the process and the other. Tani tana kamei Rabbi Yechon. who was a chacham, presented the halacha in front of Yechanan. Kol hashchita is kshiras bazar. All throughout the Torah, you find that shchita is kasha through a zar, even a carbon could be nishcha through a zar. Chutz mishal para, para is different. Over there, we need a kayin. Amalir Rabbi Yechanan, I don't agree. Put go outside, Tani LeBron, teach it to the fellows outside. Don't bring it to the base medrash. I disagree. Lo yimot sinu shchita bazar psalch. We never find that a zar cannot do shchita. Paradum is no different. Rabbi Yechanan says the Gemara, lo yimot bayil etana. Rabbi Yechon, not only didn't he listen to this Tana, to this Chacham, he didn't agree with him. Elafilu l'Rabbi l'Tzayis, he didn't even agree with his own Rabbi. The Amar Rabbi Yechonan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yitzadik, because Rabbi Yechon quotes Rabbi Shimon Yitzadik, his Rabbi, who hold likewise Shchitas para bezar psula, that Shchita of a para done through a bezar is possible. Why, as we learned yesterday, it's a Shchitas Rav. He holds Pura Duma is a kachaved the kabayis, and although generally speaking, by karbonis shchita is not on the same level as the other avoiders, but that's when it pertains to a carbon which you bring in the Beis Hamikdash. So we downgrade the shchita, we don't regard it the same level as the other avoiders, hakrava, like hazor, etc. But when it comes to pura Duma, which is a kachaved the kabayis, it's a procedure. It's a procedure like any other, like maris in the gun. You need a kayan, you need him throughout, from beginning to end. That's Rav Shita. Rabbi Yechon disagrees, he says. Shchita can only be done through a zar. Vali oimer ksheru, I hold shchita as paraduma through a zar is kasher loy matzino, because we don't find anywhere that a shchita shepsula bizar. Continues the Gemara, bolo itzel parashnia. The Kohen Gadol approaches his par for the second time. First time, he said a vidui on behalf of himself and his family. And now he proceeds with another vidui. And he says a vidui on behalf of himself, his family, and his fellow Kohanim. Maishna says to him, why do we find this difference? During the first time around, he didn't mention Bnei Aaron. Umaishna bevidu sheni de Amar ubnei Aaron kedushach. But why is it that the second time he mentions them? Why didn't he mention them the first time as well? Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, I'll tell you the pshat. Kachi midas hadinei senis. This is the proper, the just way, the way that makes sense. Mutav yavi zakai. It's preferred that one who has been cleansed of his averis. Once the Kohen Gadol already made a vidui for himself and his family, he's been cleansed. The vidui itself brings kapara. Now he's available, and he's roy. He's suitable to act as an advocate for his fellow kohanim. Yovei Zaka, Zaka will come along v'chapar l'chayiv, and bring kapara for those who are guilty. Val yovei chayiv v'chapar l'chayiv. But would it make sense for a person who's still guilty, or still carrying a load of averus, to attempt to act as an advocate for other people? That's why he first has to take care of himself. During the first vidui, he cleanses himself and his family. Ishtik gufoy, say the mefarshim. And then, and only then, is he right to serve as an advocate on account of his fellow kohanim, and he does vidui for them as well. Continues the Mishnah. So once he does the second vidui, shchotoy, he did the shchita on the par, the kibel ba mizrak as dam, and he was makabel a dam in the vessel and a mizrak a klisharis. And he hands it over to a kohen who would mix it, keep it moving, keep it flowing, to prevent it from congealing. While the kohen gadol was engaged in other activities and bringing the teiris, he would mix it ala roivid haravi shebeichel on the fourth row of tiles shebeichel. The Gemara will explain to us exactly what this means. It means actually the fourth row of tiles counting from the Heichal back towards the Azor. Why was he mixing it? Kadesh le'yikrish, to prevent it from congealing. In the meantime, the Kohen Gadol went up to the Mizbeach to prepare for the Keturis. Not al machte, grabbed the shovel, v'alosh of Mizbeach, and up, went up to the top of the Mizbeach. U'pina gecholam elav ha'eloch. And he mixed aside the coals, over to the right, over to the left, and he dug into the middle, the choyte, and he would scoop out min ha'mukoles ha'pnimis. Those inner coals were properly burnt, don't contain any flames, just good coals, which are perfect for the k'tiris. V'yorad, he descended from the mizbeach v'nicha, and he placed the machta with those coals, ala roivid ha'revish v'azorah, on the fourth row of tiles, in the azorah, meaning counting four rows from the Mizbeach towards the Heichal, that's where he placed the Macht. Now, there are some differences between how this thing was performed throughout the year. And the way it was done on Yom Kippur, b'chol yom, throughout the year, hayachoyte b'shal kesef, he would scoop using a silver machta, u'ma'ara b'sech shal zav, and then spill the content, the coals, into a gold machta. So they would use a silver one during the scooping process, when it would scrape away, it would wear out the machta. So instead of gold, they would use silver to mitigate the loss, and then you'd go ahead and pour it into the gold. V'ayoyim, on Yom Kippur, we want to make things easy for the Kohen Gadol, less mixing, less effort. Choyse b'shal zav, he would scoop using a gold machta, u'vayim machnis. And using that machta, he would simply take the coals into the Kodesh HaKadosh. No transferring, no spilling over, make it easier for him. B'chol yoyim, throughout the year, on a typical day, choyse b'shal aboros kav, he would use a large size machta, which contained 4 kav of coals. So he began to four, u'ma'ora, and he would pour the coals into a smaller size machta, which only contained 3 kabin, and 1 kab would simply spill on the floor. Some Rishonim say it was Lachamesh Mesinai to do it in this manner. But today in Kippur, when he was involved in the Keteris, which was brought to the Lefnai Lefnim, which didn't need this halacha, and although perhaps we just want to keep things consistent and the same as throughout the year, no, we do deviate, we make it easier for him, we say, look, start with a smaller size machta, and no spilling over is necessary. And he begins with a machta that contains 3 kav, and he would bring the coals in with that machta, without a need to switch to a different machta. Rabbi Yossi Omer, he presents different numbers. Throughout the year, he'd scoop out using a machta which contained a saw, which is 6 kab, and pour the content into a machta which had half the content, half the capacity, 3 kab. As opposed to today, he scooped using a smaller machta containing 3 kab. Another difference. Throughout the year, it was a heavyweight machta, thick-walled, durable, v'yayim kala, but today it was lightweight, thin walls, to make it easier for the kohen. Throughout the year, it had a short handle, v'yayim arucha, today it was a long handle. Yishalmi says it was an arm and a half long. The purpose was to make it easier for the kohen, this way he can support the handle under his arm, make it easier for him. Throughout the year, it was a yellowy gold, v'yayim adah, and today the machta was rose gold, more reddish, which was similar to the dam, the color of the dam of the par. Divrei Rabbi Menachem, that's a shit. Bechol yom, throughout the year, makre pras b'shachrus, pras ben arbayim. He would take a mana is 100 tzuz, that much, a mana weight of keteris. Half you brought in the morning, which was 50 tzuz worth, and half in the afternoon. That's it. V'ayayim, and you keep her moisif, mili chafna. If you add another dose of keteris, a handful of keteris, which he will bring into the Kodesh HaKadosh. B'chol yoyim he says dak. Throughout the year, the Keteris was finely ground. V'ayoyim daka min adaka. Today it was extra fine. Continues the Mishnah with several more examples of differences between Yom Kippur and your typical day in the Beis HaMikdash, not necessarily Keteris related. B'chol yoyim kohanim oilen b'mizrach shel kevesh. On a typical day, kohanim would climb up the kevesh alongside its mizrach side, its right side. The yod maravi and descend alongside the marav side, the left side. So, for instance, you have the mizbeach and the kevesh leading up to the mizbeach. And as we learned earlier in the mesechta, when you did something in the mizbeach, you would go derech yimin, you'd go up and you'd circle around the mizbeach and come back down. So the kohen would go up along the right side of the kevesh, the mizrach side, instead of beginning on the left side, the marav side, and have to perhaps cross over necessarily, which wouldn't be really considered covered of Mizbeach. So they would try to shorten their route as much as possible. They would go up along the right side of the Mizbeach, the Mizrach side, and go up to the Mizbeach, make their circle around, and come back down alongside the Marav side of the Kevesh, the left side, thereby shortening their route. V'ayayim, v'terei Yom Kippur, Kohen Gadol oyle b'emtza, v'yor b'emtza. He goes up and down the Kevesh right in the middle. Why? Let's see Rashi here. About 6-7 lines above our position in the Gemara. So Rashi Vayayim, Kohen Gadol, Marek, Voidoi, Vechibosan, Shal Yisrael. He represents Yisrael, and he's there to express and demonstrate the kavod and the affinity that Hashem has to Yisrael. Shu shluchan, he represents them. Va'oise atzmek v'en bayis, he feels at home. And therefore, he wouldn't have to go ahead and shorten the route. He just goes up and down the kevesh, derech kavod. Continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Aymer, l'oilam, Kohen Gadol oila be'emtza aviyar be'emtza. Kohen Gadol would do this throughout the year as well. It wasn't unique to Yom Kippur. Continues the Mishnah. Kohen Gadol mekadesh yodav raglav and akir. Throughout the year, Kohen Gadol would do kiddush yodav raglav using the kir, like the other kohanim. V'ayayim on Yom Kippur menakitan shel zav. He would wash using a golden pitcher. Rabbi Yehuda, l'oilam, Kohen Gadol mekadesh yodav raglav menakitan shel zav. This was done throughout the year as well. Now, how many ma'arochis were there on the Mizbeach? How many wood arrangements? Abaye taught us earlier in the Masechta, there were actually two, at least two. There was the Ma'aroch G'doyla, the one used for the Tamid, for the Karbonis, and then a smaller wood arrangement for the Keteris. So at least two. On Yom Kippur, well, you know, we had to add another one, another ma'arocha to supply coals for the Keteris used in the Kodesh HaKadosh. So that's universally accepted. All shittas agree. Throughout the year, typically you had at least two. And Yom Kippur all agree, you had to add another one. The question is, what was the total amount throughout the year? What was the final number? Some say two. Some actually say three. Why another one? Kiyum ha'esh. It was used as a pilot flame. We'll learn about that later in the Gemara, right? This Hashem. Some say there were actually four on a typical day. Another one, which was used to burn up the yivarim of the carbonates which remained from yesterday. So all agree, at least two, all agree you had to add another one in Yom Kippur. So what's the total number? Well, it all depends on your starting point. Says the Mishnah, B'chol yayim ha'yisham arba ma'arochis. On a typical day, you had four wood arrangements on the Mizbeach. V'hayayim on Yom Kippur chamesh. You had another one for a total of five. Dear Amen. Rabbi Yaisi yayim ha'no. B'chol yayim shalish. Throughout the year, you only had three. And today he had another one, Vayayim Arba, for a total of four. Vidayim, Vachalayim Shtayim. Usually it was only two, Vayayim Shalish. Today he added a third one. So it's a total of Shalish. So, in conclusion, we had differences between your typical day in the Beis HaMikdash and Yom Kippur. When it came to the Keteris, throughout the year, he would scoop out the coals using a Machtosh Shal Kesef to minimize the loss. And the Kesef Machtosh was actually large in size, either four cup, according to other shita and b'yasi, it was a sa'ah in size. And then he would mix the coal, spill it into a zahav shovel, which only contained three kav. On Yom Kippur, he began and ended with the same shovel, a machta shel zahav, which contained three kav. Usually it was heavyweight, a durable machta. Today it was a lightweight machta. Usually the handle was short, today it was long. Usually the machta was a yellowy gold, and today reddish gold, according to Rabbi Nach. Ordinarily, half the Keteris was brought in the morning, half in the afternoon. Today he added another portion, Malay Chafnov of Keteris, for the Kodesh HaKadosh. Generally, it was finely ground. Today, double fine. Generally, the Kohanim would go up on the Mizrach, come down the Meirav. Today, the Kohen Gadol would go up and down Be'emtza HaKevish. Generally, the Kohen Gadol would do Kiddush using the Kir, and today, Akita Shazov, and of course, these two items were the Shitas Tanakam, regarding the Marochis. It was generally either two, three, or four. And today we added another one for a total of three, four, or five. Continues the Gemara of Aksiv. The Mishnah tells us, when he did the Shechit on the par, he handed the dam to this fellow who was standing, Al ha-roi b'd'ravi shebe'echel, on the fourth row of tiles in the Hechel. The Gemara assumes we mean literally in the Hechel. How can he be in the Hechel during the Haktaris Keteris? The Pasuk says, V'aksiv, v'chal adam l'yabay l'mayed. Nobody can be there. There may not be anybody present in the Hechel during that Torah's Keteris. Amrav Yehuda Tni Shel Hechel, revised the Mishnah. It was Al Ariva Tarevi on the fourth row of tiles, Shel Hechel, counting from the Hechel out to the Azorah. He wasn't in the Hechel. He was next to the Hechel. Fourth row from the Hechel. Okay, time for a brief chazar of today's daf. We discussed the Paraduma production process. Sometimes the rules remained intact. From one ma'aseh to the other, sometimes we have a sudden change of rules. Or ma'ati echkimon, v'rechoikim imeni. We learned that initially the Kohen Gadol would save Yidden for himself and his family. Once he's a zakai, now he's a suitable candidate to be an advocate for Echav HaKohanim and do Vidoy on account of them as well. We had a Mishnah which gave us an extensive list of chilukim between Yom Kippur and your typical day in the Beis HaMikdash. Kol Tov v'Hatzlacha Rabbah.